It was George Washington who first coined the phrase clever trees. So for the first of five programs exploring trees that have almost human-like characteristics, we've come to Washington's country estate at Mount Vernon, just outside of the American city, the capital, which of course bears his name. The tree, or rather the trees we're meeting today, are in anthropological terms Siamese twins, Holly twins, and with me here by them is the estate's director of horticulture, Dean Norton. What are we actually looking at here, Dean?
Well, we're standing by one of our seven hollies that we feel date back from Washington's time. It's a double trunk tree, one side's male, one side's female. So come Christmas time, we have options, don't we? If someone wants berries, we can cut the berry side. If they want just green, we can cut the green side. But this is an interesting tree because it definitely probably was the end tree in this hedgerow that we see running right alongside this Serpentine Avenue. Washington really praised hollies. He loved hollies, as a matter of fact, for the reason that hollies produce hundreds, if not thousands, of berries, which he can easily collect. And he would have collected barrels of these seed and sown them because it would establish a hedgerow, which more than anything else acted as a screen. So he was trying to surround this very private area, what he called the pleasure grounds, by these holly trees. He did hedgerows here at the west end of the Bowling Green and also along the north and south lane closer to the house, which help screen the work areas from the east lawn where a lot of entertaining took place, because obviously they were enjoying the view across the Potomac River.
The trunk starts as a single trunk, and I guess it goes up, what, a foot 18 inches, and then splits into two.
Right.
Similar sort of size, I guess, if we put our arms around them, we could just about join our hands, not quite, at the other side of the trunk. So they're fairly large in girth. At what point did they split? At what point did this become one side male, one side female? Or has it always been two trees?
It's always been. My feeling is that it's always been two trees. Going back to the records, we find this to be the case, that this particular hedge was planted by seeds sown in a drill. So he would have dug a trench, laid the seeds. Obviously, he would have accepted whatever would germinate. So these germinated side by side, so be it. So as you can tell, as these trunks came closer and closer together, especially at the base, typically any sort of tree has a flare at the base of the tree, which is what it should have. And as you say, right at the base, you can see where the two trees have now formed a union. And actually, it's pretty good. It's nice, tightly knit. I don't think those are going to split apart at any time soon. At least we certainly hope not. So, no, it started as two trees joined together, and now they're happily growing as one. But still, one side remains the female, one side remains the male.
It would be normal practice if you were planting seeds into a drill to perhaps put two in there to guarantee that at least one would germinate, but then if both germinate to remove the weakest of the two. That wasn't what Washington decided to do.
Certainly not in this case. I think he would have accepted as many as would have come up. He wanted a screen, he wanted it thick. Washington was one that planted very heavily throughout this entire Bowling Green area. He was planting, it seems, 8 to 12 foot center with significant trees. We're talking American hollies, which, as you can see, get quite large. Tulip poplars.
50, 60 feet high?
I would say so. 45 to 55 feet high. It's not terribly high. Hollies aren't typically that large. Some of them on the Bowling Green are taller. Some of them get up to 60, 65 feet, maybe a little more.
Your hollies get bigger than our hollies, though.
Well, you know, that's typical for a lot of our trees. The tulip poplar here can grow to 145 feet. And I remember going through outside the outskirts of London, and you had tulip poplars, but they were almost dwarf compared to ours. But no, Washington planted heavily with excitement. He mentioned in the spring, I planted this. I planted an elm. I planted a hickory. I planted a poplar. The next fall, the elm died, the poplar died, the hickory, they all died, basically, because it was one of the worst summers on record. So it was a constant effort, lots of planting, replanting, dying, transplanting. So here, I think if five seeds had come up, he would have gone for it. That's just great.
And you say with excitement. So
with excitement,
he loved trees.
He loved trees. He did. He in his earliest writings as a surveyor, when he would be going out, when he was going out in the woods and surveying land, he always took time to enjoy the beauty of trees, the fall color, the foliage, the different branch structure, whatever it may be, and flowers. He loved flowers. He called flowering trees the clever kind. And the South Grove was where he planted all of his clever kinds of trees. So over on that side, you would find indeed the holly for the screen, but then you'd find the southern magnolia, lilac, crabapple, dogwood, redbud. He loved dogwoods and redbuds. Every spring, a spring wouldn't go by where he wouldn't mention the color coming in the dogwoods and the redbuds. So he loved trees, he did.
And he'd have been fascinated by this dual holly. This,
oh, wouldn't he be thrilled?
Siamese twin tree, I suppose.
Oh, I
you should
so.
Call it, really.
I think so. You know, it's almost as if it was grafted together, isn't it? I mean, it has formed a union. No, they weren't grafted, but they have fused together very nicely. It's a strong union. And take the center of each trunk. Those two seeds germinated about, 12 to 18 inches apart? If not more, maybe even 2 feet. But over to 100, 150, 200 years, as that trunk starts to grow, they connect. And when they start forming together, they form a union. Now, either it's going to be a strong union or it's not. That happened to fuse together quite nicely. But that's how I think grafting all started, is that all of a sudden someone recognized that these two branches had come together, they had touched each other, and they attached. They formed a union.
It wasn't just so close that you couldn't see the gap. There was no gap. The two bits of
they grew. You could see the callus tissue
become one.
Exactly, and you can see that on that tree when we were there. You could see the callus tissue. Callus tissue is tissue that really hasn't figured out exactly what it's supposed to do. So it doesn't know that there's supposed to be different tubes and vesicles in that wood to allow water and food to go up and down. Right now, all it knows is that there's something going on here that's a problem. We need to form lots of cells, and it just kind of random fashion creates all these cells until finally it's completely fused all together, and now someone, some leader, hopefully it was a George Washington cell, said, let me take the lead, folks. We got to get our act together. This tree has to grow, and then they settle down. But that's why callus tissue is always so bumpy and so ununiform.
If we were to take a cross-section, perish the thought, if we were to chop down one of these double trees,
yes,
and look at the growth rings, would we see a figure of eight pattern where two had fused? Or would we see two sort of circles but squashed together and perhaps joining in the middle? What would the growth rings look like, in other words?
Well, when the callus tissue or scar tissue is forming, you're not going to get a distinctive ring. So, no, you wouldn't get a figure eight. They're two distinctive trees. So you would go, for instance, the first tree that we looked at, you would certainly clearly be able to see the center where the tree started to grow. And as it went out away from the union, you would be able to count the rings quite easily and distinctly. And the rings should match. That would be the interesting thing to look at, actually, is the matching of the rings as far as which year was a bad year as far as drought, which was a good year. And if you could count out and get exactly the rings at the same year, 1812, 1799, the growth from that ring to the next should be identical. But if you go inside where the union was, you'll lose all ability to count rings, because there won't be rings, because no one had taken the lead yet to really do anything. And you won't anyway, because as you can tell, you said it was about 18 inches up where the trees actually do part and grow their own separate ways. So no, you'll get them from the middle out, but not going in toward the union.
Kids like the trees.
Oh, they love the trees. They do. You know, this huge white ash right behind us, that's the largest diameter tree that we have. It's about 15 and a half feet in circumference, around 145 feet tall again. You often see school groups coming in, and it all of a sudden, they're all wrapping their arms around it to see how many kids it takes to put their arms around the tree. Kids, families love big trees. I mean, they just really grow an attachment to them immediately. They know it's history itself. They know that these trees, once they realize they were planted under the direction of George Washington, they're the only living witnesses left here at Mount Vernon that were here during the time that Martha and George walked these grounds.
That's the extraordinary thing about these trees. They've witnessed all this change over the past 200 or 300 years.
Exactly.
They do provide us with the direct link. They're the only things that can provide us with the direct link back to your first president.
Well, that's right.
Off my cap, shouldn't I, in the presence of these
should.
Trees?
Well, no, you should. I'm saluting right now. These trees are very special, and I certainly look at these as the horticulturist at this site as something just as special, and I'm going to take just as good care of these trees as our curator and others take care of the mansion and the decorative arts within. These, to me, are actually priceless objects.
George Washington would be proud of you. Do you sometimes feel his clammy hand on your shoulder at night? Do you sometimes feel his hot breath breathing on your neck and getting your hackles rising?
No, not really. But I'll tell you what, I am so proud to be here. I think I'm the 37th gardener here at Mount Vernon, and I'm proud to be 37. If I had a jersey with 37 on it, I'd be really happy to wear it around here. You know, I'm not here to change this landscape. I'm here to preserve it. And what an honor it is to do that for someone like George Washington, who I just admire and respect incredibly.
Now then, trees are so clever, they can even change the course of political history. I'm with Margaret Kuhn of the estate. Margaret, George Washington loved Mount Vernon here so much that he turned down the opportunity of being president for a third time, and that decision effectively barred any American president from serving for more than two successive terms. He wanted to come back here, back to the house, and especially back to the trees, because trees were so very much a part of his life, right up until the end.
That is correct. In fact, a couple days before his death, George Washington made his normal rounds out amongst all his farms. He would get up early and leave the house about 7-8 o'clock to go tour the grounds and make sure that everyone was doing what they were supposed to do. He caught a chill that day. And, you know, like a lot of men, he decided that it would come as it goes and he wouldn't pay any attention to it and he would swiftly recover. But the next day he needed to come out and mark some trees that he wanted cut down because it was distracting from the view overlooking the Potomac here. So he came out and it was chilly, it was snowing, and he proceeded to mark the trees for cutting, which obviously did not help the chill he had developed. And that afternoon he went back into the house and his inflammation got worse, and the next day he died from what was an inflammation of the throat at that time known as quinsy.
Trees were his life. They became his death as well in a perverse way.
In a way, but I think he would have wanted to go that way, out here amongst his beloved Mount Vernon and having, you know, gone about his normal business, which was to continue to improve the land he so much loved.
Trees, or certainly the color of trees, green, was never far from Washington's mind. Even indoors, he couldn't take the trees indoors, but he could take the color green in with him.
That's right. As you could tell, green was one of his favorite colors. In the large dining room, there's a lovely green called verdigris green that it's painted there. And also in the small dining room, a more vibrant green you'll find in that room. It was believed that green aided in the digestion process, which is why both dining rooms have green in them. And Washington felt that green was grateful to the eye, as he said it. So I think his love of nature, the green of the outdoors, the trees, the flowers, he very much brought that inside with him. And I think it relaxed him. And again, grateful to the eye and pleasing to the digestion.
And I think just another example of how trees, inadvertently at least, can be smart. Thank you, Margaret. Thank you also to Dean, who's nipped off now to do some urgent pruning. Join us again next week when we'll be meeting more clever trees.